kind of interesting that I am here in the stages room because Gebser doesn't have any stages, as I mentioned. However, there is a lot of overlap actually with what Gebser was talking about. He had a concept, Peter, that you were talking about with the seed, and he described it as latency. So the structures kind of move and they are latent things. The dimensionality of the structure is within itself and all of the structures are contained in the other. So I just wanted to mention an interesting connection there. So let's see if we can get. So some of you may have read Ever-Present Origin at some point, or maybe not. If you haven't, I recommend that you do. It's the kind of book that can really change the way you think about thinking. It actually kind of gives thinking a shape and a structure, so you can actually sort of observe the way in which you are thinking as a modern, who's a very spatialized modern. I'm going to get into that in a second. So, just a few notes, because not many people are familiar with Gebser directly. He was the guy who came up with archaic, magic, mythic, mental, integral. And so Gebser was born in 1905 in Prussia as Hans Gebser, and he died in 1973. He was a poet. He was a poetic scholar. He was a cultural philosopher and an intellectual mystic. And essentially, the heart of what he was exploring was that consciousness undergoes a series of mutations. These mutations aren't exactly linear, but a breakthrough, a kind of a creative breakthrough happens in which human beings realize a new dimensionality of time and space. And the best way to understand that is to engage with the particular art and language and etymology of a civilization. So a lot of his text, Ever-Present Origin, is a really slow, careful unpacking of language and words and tracing the root of a word into its sort of magical, archaic numinosity and then moving up into the mythic and the mental. So he began with an interest in Rilke, and he was very moved by the power and the poetry of Rilke, the spaciousness of Rilke's poetry. And so he began on a kind of mystical, poetic pilgrimage to Spain, in which he has a kind of inkling of the integral consciousness. And he's writing here, the predominance of the sky in the Spanish landscape, in particular in Castile, the purity, the extraordinary transparency of the light. He's describing this vibrating, shimmering emptiness of the plateau. So he's having a kind of spiritual connection. And of course, if you've read Rilke, he writes in this way, a single expanse stretches through every being, an interior cosmos. Birds fly in silence right through us. So for Gebser, this was the integral, this kind of spacious openness in which things arise and dissipate. And then later in a poem, the shining winter sky is close enough to touch, and you too are the sky, no reason to distinguish, for all the stars flow through your veins. So I won't get into this because we don't have enough time. I have like 175 slides here. It's like my master slide sheet. But this was his first breakthrough. He felt this. He was friends with folks like Picasso and Federico Lorca, another poet you may be familiar with. And through Lorca, he felt this intense connection with the dead. And in Spain especially, being in such an ancient place, he felt the ever-presence of the dead, of those who were before. He felt as if time, the past, present, and future could somehow, like that sky, be present and latent in us. Not just the past, but also the future. So, maybe I can move us ahead really quick, sorry. Where'd my slides go? There they are. I just need to move us over. As you can see, there's quite a lot here. But I really just want to get us to the archaic and the magic. So here are the structures, right? So let's begin at the archaic. Let's kind of go through this journey. Because for Gebser, discovering the integral was actually the opening into the whole, into kind of what he describes as the wearing through of the structures of consciousness. And so we're familiar with the archaic a little bit. Gebser describes the unfolding of the structures as unfolding of dimensionalities, right? So the archaic is the zero dimension, the seed in which all of the other structures emerge from. It's synonymous with the integral, but in latency. And he describes a complete non-differentiation of man and universe. And a mythical illusion that could be very helpful is the androgyne, the myth of the androgyne, the primal man, the kind of unified cell that's both masculine, feminine, etc. There's a dormancy, there's a latency, as I'm describing, and don't mind the date there. That's always changing with anthropology. We don't know when human beings started being humans. It probably goes beyond humans. Neanderthals were burying their dead and having ritual, and it goes further and further back into hominids. So we can't even say it belongs to us as a particular species. But he quotes this, "Dreamlessly, the men of earlier times slept." And I already talked that. And so we have this leap, and you could see it in the record with Homo sapiens, at least. You can see this explosion of creativity and ritual and ornamentation, and this is just sort of a kind of creative effervescence with us. We just sort of explode onto the scene very rapidly. But magic, etymologically, is linked to make and mechanism and machine, and for Gebser, the magic and the mental actually have a very intimate relationship. So the magic is the gut, and he associates it with the gut and the labyrinth. And of course, the mental is the head. So they're both kind of squiggly. They're both kind of that kind of non-linearity, right? But so Gebser is very embodied. He tries to associate the structures with organs. So of course, the magic is the gut. It's the intuition. It's the whole body nervous system sensing and feeling the world. It's a kind of creative imagination that's unified with that. And if you think about being in, let's see if I have an image for you, the caves of Chauvet or Lassaux, you're in the cave, you hear the echo, the acoustics, and acoustics is very holistic as well, where a sound is coming from here, but it's linked to everything else. So there's an interlinking and an interweaving, a kind of vegetative union with the world and the tribe and the individual. And the individual hasn't really coalesced yet, and I think in developmental theories, they talk about that as well, how the self kind of coalesces and concretizes. That hasn't exactly happened yet. So Gebser talks about how a lot of the power in the magical is that trance state. It is that kind of giving of the self to the group, to the we, and sensing into the we, and working with the environment, and listening to the animals. Here's kind of remnants of that Gebser points out. As we move into civilization, there's a lot of interesting motifs in art and culture, the interweaving of human beings and environment, the two-dimensionality, the linking of nature and culture. This is much later, of course, and there's more mythic stuff in here, but this is a good example. This, of course, as well from the medieval period, 1300. So I want to move us quickly along, because we don't really have much time. Got 13 minutes, and we're only in magic. So the mythical moves us out of this sort of timeless cave, right? The primordial acoustic space where one thing is all things, and moves us into movement, into time. Time is born in the mythical. And so we have astrology emerge. We have the cycles and the seasons and the rhythms of nature start to happen with agricultural civilizations. So there's a new sense of time and space. And this is essential for understanding Gebser and the structures. Each one is a new understanding of time and space that organically emerges and breaks through. So this is kind of interesting as well, actually. Maybe I can't get into it right now. But Gebser points out for the magic moving into the mythic, at first we have Venus of Brassempoi, eyes but no mouth. And I believe, who mentioned that? One of the keynote speakers, Mien, silence. That is a kind of, is important to listen, not necessarily to speak. And I think this isn't always the case, because if you've seen Ayahuasca's magic and spelling has a lot to do with voice as well, but it's listening to the sound, which is the important thing. And here's a good image of the mythic. This is actually a little different than Gebser's image in Ever-Present Origin, but essentially you have the prince, this Minoan prince, stepping into this field, and in the book it's a little bit more clear because the mountain behind him is covering his torso, and there's the vegetation here, and above him you can more clearly see stars. So it's a very good symbolic image of the moving up from the magical vegetation and into this kind of astrological dynamism of the movement and cycles of time. And so Gebser, this is what Gebser does throughout the book. He's very carefully trying to trace a lot of these images in a kind of sociological fashion. Yes, so I already mentioned that, myth and mythos and mu. But myth is related here. It means to make a sound, but it also means to be quiet. There's a polarity in here. And so with myth, we have the emergence of the soul. We have the emergence of the interior world, the interior landscape. And so the polarities of myth, of course, the heaven and hell, the underworld becomes kind of the important complementary to the, you know, sky realms and those kinds of things that you see in mythology. Even in Egyptian esoteric understanding, you have the ka and the ba, so there's even polarities in the soul. So polarities become important, complementary very often, kind of rhythmic. So yin-yang is another great example from mythic civilization. And then, well, new things start to emerge, and we have in myth, in the mythic structure, the gradual emergence of the self. And so we have this kind of thing, and you can see it across the different civilizations. We have, ego emergence. The Bhagavad Gita is sort of go forth, right? Sing, Iliad, sing, goddess, the wrath of Peleus' son Achilles. So what's interesting, though, about this, and then let's see if I have a slide for it. Picture Zeus birthing Athena from his head. It's this very mental, there's a directedness. There is the god with the furrowed brow. The organ of the mental, moving into the mental, is the head and is the eyes, perception in space. That starts to become a little bit more important. And of course, this is important as well. The language, menis, meaning wrath. So mental and wrath and the brow are all kind of etymologically linked and connected, and we can kind of root ourselves in understanding the mental a little bit better by seeing its origin point there. So I'm talking about law and everything here, but very important, the kind of rhythmic oceanic round of the mythic is burst open with the logic. But also, when you see with Christianity, we have this kind of triune God. So the emergence of paradox kind of breaks through that oceanic kind of thinking. And this is a precipitation to what we see a little bit later on, right? So what we have here, and if you've noticed in this really, really quick presentation, there's a kind of moving through dormancy, through latency, through the night and sidereal realms of consciousness, going into an awakened state, into a daylight state, into a state in which the eye becomes the important organ. And the eye that perceives perspectival space, objects in material space, becomes more and more important as an explanatory power, as artistic inspiration, etc., or philosophical, as we see here. But the mental rational comes online a little bit later. And so for Gebser, mental and mental rational are very different. The mental rational is what he calls a deficient stage. It means when the mental, which has created that self, that existential self in space, begins to kind of fold in on itself and it's no longer creatively exploring or emerging or doing something novel or new, it's sort of relying on itself more. So there's further fragmentation and further abstraction, further atomization, which we are seeing today, of course, as well. And I don't think we have time for that. But, of course, with the integral, Gebser says that time begins to emerge. And so the emergence of time for Gebser is not linear time per se, but it is an awareness of the magical timelessness, the mythical rhythmicity, the mental linearity, the kind of process of development and that kind of thing, spatialization. And then the integral, interestingly, he says, is the first time that time itself is erupting, is realized in our consciousness. In the same way that we became awake to the daylight mental scientific, secular world, time is being birthed in us, even now. And so I think all of us are here because we're interested in time. We're interested in processes of becoming and emergence. So this becomes the central inspiration for consciousness that needs to work itself out through the humanities and the sciences and so on. And so Gebser saw this in his own time with folks like Picasso, or even Lorca, who was sort of shining time back into the past. But with Picasso, in his time, a lot of his images are very multidimensional. He says, time is only time when it is fully concretized, when the past, present, and future are expressed here. And that's very difficult. It's weird to think about time in that kind of whole way. And that's the thing what he's saying. He's saying this is the integral manifestation. It's this diaphanous awaring of all time, past, present, and future. I'm like, let's see, 5 more minutes. Oh my gosh. Cool. So maybe this, the eruption of time into our consciousness. This is the profound and unique event of our historical moment. It presents us with a new theme and a task, and its realization, which comes about through us, is attended by a wholly new reality of the world, a new intensity and a freer awareness which supplant the confusion that seems to give our world its most characteristic stamp. Wherever we encounter this theme in the manifestation forms of our lives, we are face to face with the initial manifestations of the aperspectival world. And I didn't mention perspective or any of that, but we don't have to get into that right now. So maybe we can get into some examples really quickly. Yeah, and maybe I can get into this, something he specifically had. So later in his life, in the 60s, Gebser started traveling through Asia and talking with Asian scholars and relating what he was working on with integral consciousness with Asian philosophers like D.T. Suzuki. And while he was in Sarnath, he had what would be called a Satori experience. He had a very profound awakening experience here. And perhaps we can have this as a takeaway. So he describes what he encountered here, which is the integral. And D.T. Suzuki said, oh, that integral thing you're talking about, that's what us Zen Buddhists call enlightenment or Satori. Good job. It was sober on the one hand, happening with crystal clarity in everyday life, which I perceived and to which I reacted normally, and on the other hand, and simultaneously being a transfiguration and irradiation of the indescribable, unearthly, transparent light. No ecstasy, no emotion, but a spiritual clarity, a quiet jubilation, a knowledge of invulnerability, a primal trust. Since Sarnath, I am as if recast inwardly. Since then, everything is in its proper place, and it continues to take effect and is in a way an irradiation that is always present and at hand. So this is a lifetime kind of realization for him from the beginning with Rilke in Spain and Malaga, and then moving into this kind of concretization of the integral for him. And he writes this in a later book, Decline and Participation. Just a kind of an interesting list of what are the qualities of the integral structure, right? So haste is replaced by the silence and the capacity for silence. Mechanistic classification and organization is replaced by the being in order. Homo faber is replaced by homo integer. The divided human being is replaced by the whole. The emphasis of the limited world is replaced by the open expanse of the open world. And so what's interesting here is that Gebser, throughout Ever-Present Origin, retreats from classifying and building as stages. To some degree he does, because there is an increase of dimensionality, but he shies away from that kind of categorization, which he says rightly is mental and has its place, but not as a dominant and exclusive approach to understanding integral consciousness, because you can kind of see it almost more like a mandala or a sphere, because you have the sort of night realm consciousness that came online, and then you have the waking realm, but the integral isn't either. It's a shining through of the whole. It's a shining through of the whole process of the evolution of consciousness. And so the integral is that sort of emergent property that is awaring and diaphanous. And that's one of his words. Dia means to shine, I believe. And phenon means to... No, dia is to go through. And phenomenon is to shine through. So diaphanous. And time, we don't have enough time for time. Maybe we can do that later. But... in the minute that's remaining, maybe I can simply mention that there's a lot of interesting things, and this is where my own studies come in from studying Gebser for the past decade or so. With contemporary media and art, there's really interesting, especially with digital art, especially with the kind of existential musings of manga and science fiction, and especially science fiction, about this relationship between the mental and the integral consciousness coming online. This kind of, he called it a Janus-faced, right? There's a dissolution and there's a solution between the structures. And we're in that kind of in-betweenness, that liminality. And so perhaps we can talk about that later. And if you want to talk with me after this, maybe over lunch, or we can riff together in the evening sometime. So thank you.